Greetings and welcome to Trottle Up. This is a radio show and podcast that showcases critical thinking and complex problem solving. And it is designed to inform, delimit, empower, and amaze. Now, all aboard the Trottle Up Express, powered by High Velocity Reason, and I am your host, Captain Kevin Smith, U.S. Navy retired. Now, I'm a naval aviator and former squadron commander and Top Gun instructor as a naval aviator. And also, I'm a pioneer in the field of some aspects of critical thinking and complex problem solving, and of course, high velocity reason. Now, our tagline for the show is to accelerate beyond the ordinary. So we could say that we are not ordinary thinkers, you and I, but we are different and we are out of the box thinkers. Our motto for the show is to employ high velocity reason to achieve high octane performance. And in a nutshell, that basically means to stay out ahead of the problem. That's particularly important if we want to achieve success. Now, our mission statement for the show, and this changes a little bit from time to time, but this is a pretty good mission statement, is to provide our listening audience with a relatively easy yet effective way to strengthen our power of reason through the employment of critical thinking. Now, our website, the address here is throttleupradio.com. That's throttleupradio.com. That's the address for the website. And before we close on our introduction, I wanted to say that our audio engineering services is provided by Evergroove Studios, and they are located in Evergreen, Colorado, which is right outside of Denver on the west side. Highly recommend their services for anyone who wants to get involved with audio. It could be any kind of audio that you might have in mind, including music, by the way. Also, graphics artist services and media support is provided by Reflections Printing, and the gal is Jennifer. She heads up this organization, and she owns it as well. And Jennifer does a great job with all of our media support, is a fantastic graphics artist and media production specialist, and her phone number is 435-574-0422. That's 435-574-0422. And before we close the introduction, I want to say that the show is typically organized into three parts. So part one of Throttle Up is critical thinking, or an ongoing discussion of various aspects of critical thinking and complex problem solving. Part two is our storyboard, and the storyboard is a story of America, or a story of Americans, story of an individual. It could be any kind of story, but it all relates to trying to get our arms around this whole thing, which we call critical thinking and complex problem solving. And then part three is our radio essay. Now, our radio essay is typically a little bit more in-depth treatment of a particular subject. We do not intend for this to be boring. But for those who would like a little bit more info on certain things that we cover in part one and part two, then part three typically is a way for us to get a little bit further into a subject matter and understand it better. Okay, all aboard the Throttle Up Express. This is a place where all critical thinkers and complex problem solvers are welcome with open arms. And welcome back to Throttle Up Part 1 for this week. Part 1 is, of course, our continuing discussion of critical thinking and complex problem solving. But before we begin, a couple of quick announcements. We've got some things going on, and so I'll just briefly touch on them, and I'll get more information to you probably next week as things firm up. First thing is that we have our ad is running again on the outdoor bulletin board in New York City, which is near Times Square. And that bulletin board is controlled by Red State Talk Radio. So we have our ad running on that, and I believe it runs 15 minutes past the hour. So any of you that are in New York City may want to run by there. It's between 6th and 7th Avenue on 42nd Street. It's near Times Square. Also, we have our podcast available now. So the show, Throttle Up, is available in podcast format. And it is available now on iTunes. And so you can go to iTunes and type in Throttle Up Radio, and you can get our podcast. A number of them are available there. So I would recommend that for anybody who wants to have on-demand audio. And, of course, podcasts are becoming more and more popular as we expand into our mobile devices and they become more capable. All right. Let's see. Also, we're going to have some additional time slots available for Throttle Up on the weekends on Red State Talk Radio, both channels. I'll get that information to you. Hopefully by next week, we'll have that firmed up. Okay, so this week, all right, like I said, part one, of course, is our continuing discussion of critical thinking and complex problem solving, and we'll be talking about that in some detail coming right up, and also it relates to what we're going to be talking about in part two. In part two is the jobs report that was just recently announced by the Commerce Department. And we're going to be talking about that in some measure of detail because I think it's particularly important that we understand what's going on economically in America. And I know that most of you out there have read or heard things about it. And we will be talking about it from a little bit different perspective, but I think it's going to be kind of new and refreshing to look at it from the perspective of being a critical thinker or how critical thinkers ought to consider such situations or such things or such happenings in our lives. So that is basically going to be the crux of the show. Not sure that we're going to be able to get into the part three this week, but we might, but I'm not I'm not counting on it. I think often I go a bit long in some segments of the show, and so I have to take that into account. All right, part one: critical thinking and complex problem solving. Now, I mentioned before, and I'm going to mention this again, that critical thinking and complex problem solving are the most sought after skills in the global job market and the most difficult to fill. And that is quite profound. And it means that we are into a new intellectual era where critical thinking and complex problem solving are front and center in this new intellectual frontier. And I mentioned this before. We are now entering into a new intellectual era. I call it moving into a new intellectual frontier. And what does that mean? Well, it means that we need to understand, practice, and employ critical thinking and complex problem solving in our daily lives and our work lives and the way we view the world, because it's particularly important that we do so. And it also keeps us abreast of what's happening in the modern industrial world. We have now kind of moved into a more of a cognitive domain where we have previously been infatuated by the machines that we can build, and the machines that we can build are important. I don't want to diminish their value, but they are necessary for our lifestyle, but it is not sufficient. They are not an end to themselves. Our machines are important, but they do not diminish our ability to think critically about things. And most people now are beginning to recognize, or at least most thinkers now, and I would say most of us, most Americans, are considering the fact that the machines are wonderful, but they don't replace the human ability to reason. And our ability to reason is unique, and it should not be diminished or should not be considered subordinate to anything. Okay, so if in fact, and I mentioned this last week, I wanted to continue our discussion of what we call complex problem solving. Right now, critical thinking and complex problem solving are two terms that are used together in a lot of cases. And that's fine. There are some distinctions between the two. So critical thinking, you could say that's sort of like a baseline cognitive attributes that we all ought to possess. And complex problem solving is more focused. It's more intentional in terms of we intend to do something. We intend to, in this case, we intend to solve a particular problem because we are engaged in some kind of a purposeful activity. We are engaged in some kind of a meaningful activity, or we are pursuing a goal or a mission. And so when we pursue this goal or this or set of goals or this mission, I like to think of it as a mission, we may and very likely will encounter a problem or a series of problems along the way. So how do we deal with that? Are problems to be dealt with on a singular basis? Are they just like one-off events that occurs from time to time, and each one is solved utilizing its own unique process? Or can problems be considered to be more generic, more cross boundaries, so to speak? In other words, can a complex problem be solved in a similar fashion across disciplines or across industries? Now, many would say that no, problems can't be that. They can't be generalizable to that extent. I would disagree with that. My position is that there are general problem-solving principles that can be used for a whole set of different kinds of problems that cross disciplines and cross industries and cross enterprises. In other words, break down the smokestacks and the silos in our culture, in our industrial world, and in our thinking. So to start off, and I've mentioned this on some previous show, bears repeating. So to start off with our discussion of complex problem solving, I would say this, that unless specifically trained otherwise, when confronted with a complex problem, humans will typically perform poorly, resulting in poor choices, degraded performance, and ultimately mission failure. So if we encounter a problem, the first line of inquiry ought to be this. We ought to ask ourselves or our team or our colleagues, we ought to ask them and us, Is the problem simplex or complex? Now, simplex means simple. Complex means what you think it might. It is not simple. It is not straightforward. And it is not linear. So if the problem is simplex, then continue with linear problem solving. And that's sort of like a linear process. It's not sort of like a linear process. It is a linear process. And in other words, if A happens, then do B. That's a linear process. Now, that works for the simple problems in life. But what about problems that are not simple? What about problems that are, in fact, complex? How do we deal with them? Well, we employ what's called nonlinear problem solving. So the problem is complex. We cannot solve it utilizing linear thinking. We have to solve it utilizing nonlinear thinking, or another way of saying that is nonlinear problem solving. So again, if the problem is complex, we cannot solve it in traditional ways. We have to solve it utilizing methods and concepts and best practices that revolve around this idea of non-linearity, non-linear problem solving. Now, the first thing then is to ask ourselves if we have figured out or strongly suspect that the problem is complex. The next question that we ought to address ourselves to is, why is the problem complex? Why is it? And so we need to list the reasons why we think that the problem is complex, and can the problem be visualized? And in most cases, yes, it ought to be visualized. So create the visual. Create the visualization. Visualize the problem in various ways. What are the objects? What are the players? How do they relate to one another? And once we have identified the objects, key players, and their relationship, what does this network look like? And so we sort of like create a network. And so that forms a major part of the problem space, this network. Furthermore, let us ask ourselves this. What is the purpose of what we are trying to do? All right. So if we are engaged in a purposeful activity, what is the purpose that we are, what's the reason? What is its purpose? And that strongly suggests that we create some kind of a mission statement to understand and to clarify what we are trying to do. And then once we have that, then we can go back to rule number one, which is that you cannot solve complex problems using simple thinking. You can't do that. Okay, so we talked about understanding the problem space. And the reason why I'm spending a lot of time here is because if we really don't get the problem right, I don't care what it is, we're not going to be able to solve it. So complex problem solving starts with a very focused effort, a very analytically rich effort to see if we can clarify the actual, see if we can clarify what is actually going on, clarify what is the problem. And so we have created this problem space. We have the problem definition ready to go. And so then once we identify all the players and the and visualize the problem space, then we can write our problem statement. The problem statement needs to be pure, which is it's a pure problem statement. It does not reflect in any way, shape, or form a possible solution or a favorite solution. It just states the problem in as clear a way as possible. And so the problem definition then is a working document, and that begins the process. And so we can, if we're in a group or a team, and we have come together in the conference room of some organization or enterprise, and we are brainstorming, eventually what we want to do, we want to settle on the formal problem definition first and foremost. So let's say that we are a team and we've been brought together to solve a problem. The first thing is we have to identify what the problem is. And that's not, you know, in my experience, and I've done this a lot in actual efforts in my career, you can say that my career was largely being a problem solver. All right. Okay. I would go along with that. Certainly was mostly for the aviation industry, but not exclusively for that. But my career was highlighted by a whole bunch of problems that I was asked to solve. And so I became rather good at it through experience, trial and error, what have you. And then I came up with a bunch of principles, best practices, which I'm passing along in various forms. And, I'm still doing some work in this area and still refining some of my thinking as I, you know, reflect back on all the various problems that I was asked to deal with and asked to come up with a solution. So I was a problem solver and solution provider. I mean, they basically mean the same thing. And I recently got word that my latest article has been approved for publication in a peer-reviewed journal. And so I'll be passing along that information in the next few shows. It's a little bit on the technical side, but it is it's something that I was had been working on for some time, and I'm glad to announce and let you know that it has in fact been approved for publication, and it is something that. That we'll talk about that article as we go forward in the weeks and months ahead. Okay, so once we have the problem defined, within, and we're comfortable with it, we're comfortable that we have captured what is the real problem in as clear a way as possible and understood it and recognized that there are certain aspects of this problem that are uncertain, that are not necessarily easy to be determined. And so there's an aspect of the problem definition that would reside in this area that we call uncertainty. What is it? And so the problem in a complex problem solving initiative, we have to be able to deal with issues relating to complexity and uncertainty. And that they become the major drivers of what we are trying to accomplish. All right. And so the next order of business after we are comfortable with the problem and its various aspects and ramifications, then we can begin to address ourselves to finding a solution or finding a optimum solution to the problem that we have clarified. Okay, now the rest of this section one, I wanted to talk about something that is related to what we're going to be talking about in part two, which is the jobs, the American economic engine is operating at full throttle, and the jobs report reflects that. And we're going to be talking about that in some measure of detail because, and the reason why it's not just because of idle curiosity that I want to talk about this, the unprecedented economic performance that we are experiencing as we speak. But what does that mean for us? What does that mean for the people that work, the people that are employed, the people that do things? What does that mean for us doers in this country? And there are some rather really profound implications here. It's not that we can get a job if we want a job. Okay, that's becoming more and more a given because there are so many jobs available out there. It's not so much that we can get a job, but is what can we do? How can we contribute to this economic performance? How can we be part of the fuel for this economic engine? And really, what propels the economy? We can say that the jobs report propels the economy. That's actually not true. It's convenient, but it's not true. What causes a job to manifest itself? What causes a job to manifest itself is that there is an unmet need out there somewhere in the marketplace, and our efforts or our purpose in life is to fulfill this unmet need, and that then gives us a reason for work, a reason to pursue a line of business, if you will. So we can say that's my job, but that doesn't give it really justice. The economic engine is fueled by the way we perform, and it's fueled by our ideas. The ideas come first. The economic engine, in my view, is fueled by innovation and creativity. That's what fuels it. And they manifest themselves in some kind of a tangible product, if you will, or something or other that is considered to be useful to a certain segment of the population or the population at large. And so that is what I'm trying to get at. I may not have been as clear as I would like to be on this subject, but bear with me. So to complete this thing on critical thinking and conflicts problem solving, as it relates to the work that Americans are doing, as it relates to this whole issue relating to, are we just performing a job in some kind of menial way, or are we actually contributing intellectually to the American economy? So just putting in our hourly labor, is that sufficient, or are we also contributing intellectually to this economy? The economy runs on the intellectual power or the ability to reason. That's what actually makes it work, the ability to reason. Otherwise, it's meaningless activity. Here is something that I think is really quite interesting, quite profound. In this article, appears in the Wall Street Journal on the Saturday and Sunday edition, June 2nd and 3rd. And it's the head of the article is the new tech that terrifies OPEC. And the subtitle is U.S. shale oil drilling is becoming so efficient that it could hurt exporters like Saudi Arabia. Now, this is a classic example of innovation and creativity in America and the American economic engine. Okay. It starts off by saying, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. Okay. And then it says this, 2 years ago, it looked like Saudi Arabia was winning its fight against the U.S. shale oil industry by pumping crude to drive down prices. Some drillers went bust and many more flirted with bankruptcy, while oil drilling in places like West Texas and North Dakota collapsed. However, the Saudi effort backfired. Instead of killing shale, it spurred a wave of innovation that transformed U.S. drilling into a highly efficient process, dramatically lowering costs and boosting output. During the next oil bust, it will be the Saudis who have to worry. It goes on to say that high prices tend to create sloppiness in their industry because people focus only on growth. However, downturns make you focus on cost because it's the only thing you can control. Meanwhile, the U.S., where production was once thought to have peaked nearly 50 years ago, will become the largest oil producer on the planet by next year. And that's quite amazing. In 50 years, we have turned everything on its head. It goes on to say that one region alone, the prolific Permian Basin, recently passed 3.1 million barrels a day of output, stretching from West Texas to New Mexico. It would now rank number 4 of the 14 members of the Organization of the Petroleum Exporting Countries and may soon produce more than number 3, Iran. The amount of oil being pulled from the ground there is already driving global markets. But what should really frighten energy ministers in foreign countries is how that oil is produced. The number, this is an incredible situation here in the Permian oil basin. The number of drilling rigs now active in the Permian Basin is the same as it was back in 2011. Yet, the region is producing 3 times as much crude. So, they are able to produce 3 times as much crude with the same equipment. How can they possibly do that? Well, they can do that through innovation and creativity. Innovation in the real world, solving real problems, coming up with viable solutions, or another way of saying that, solving real problems with real solutions. And that's what they're doing as we speak. It's really quite incredible. And we will take a short break, and then we will come back and discuss this in more detail. Okay, we're back, and we're going to continue our discussion of the complex problem solving as it relates to the recent jobs report. And I guess the point I'm trying to make here is that, you know, instead of thinking of our purpose in life as holding a job, maybe we can think of our purpose in life as solving problems. And the old way of thinking about it was, what kind of job do you have? And I would suggest that there is a different way of thinking about what we do. The new way of thinking about it is, what kind of problems do you solve? And that probably ought to be something that we, you know, that we use, that we start employing in our personal lives, in our work lives. In other words, what do you do? I recently had a discussion with some family member about this. You know, it kind of goes like this. And I apologize for diverting just a little bit here, but I think it's appropriate. So, sometime in the future, you're sitting in business class, flying somewhere from point A to point B. In this particular case, they're flying from Singapore to San Francisco. There's a nonstop. A couple of airlines do this nonstop now. And I used to fly to Singapore when I was actively flying, so I know a lot about that country. And in fact, it's a fascinating place, and they promote this idea of innovation in a very big way, as we do in this country. Anyway, so you're sitting in first class, and you struck up a conversation with someone sitting next to you. And they say, well, what do you do? And you say, good question. I'm a problem solver. And the conversation goes along like that. What kind of problems do you solve? Any kind of problem? What kind of industry? Any industry? And so forth and so on. So maybe we ought to think of ourselves as problem solvers and not just holding a job. Anyway, back to this article, which explains in profound way what I'm talking about here. So, as I said, the number of drilling rigs now active in the Permian Basin is the same as it was back in 2011, yet the region is producing three times as much crude. Just a few years ago, a well would be drilled, and then the rig would be dismantled and moved to a new location, a time and labor-intensive process. Today, they don't do that anymore. Today, it is more common for rigs to sit on a giant pad which hosts multiple wells and the necessary infrastructure, and for them to move on their own power to a new well yards away, in other words, in the same vicinity. These rigs drill over a wider area and increasingly are being guided by instruments developed for offshore drilling and so forth as it goes on. But let me point out something here. It's kind of missed in this thing, but I want to point it out how profound this is. And that's this. Now I can go through I'll cover this in a minute, the gains and so forth and so on. But something that really is important is that there is a major driller is accompanied by the name of Encana, 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 and they, among with others, came up with this idea that to establish stationary areas in which a single drill platform can drill more than a single well. So their approach, which is called the cube, targets different layers simultaneously, which can boost the amount that can be recovered economically by about 50%. And so they viewed their operating environment, or another way of saying that, they viewed their problem space three-dimensionally. It wasn't a horizontal construct. It had a horizontal and a vertical component. So they were viewing their problem space as existing as a cube. Now, what they were able to do is they were able to drill more wells per rig. And these gains mounted up. The average number of drilling days per rig, including transport time, fell at a pace of about 8% a year. So, in other words, the hours that the drill was drilling fell at a pace of about 8% a year, okay, while the initial well production grew by 33% in just 2 years. The efficiency and drilling intensity is clear from just one site alone. As an example, the pad in this site, the pad in the Permian field, started out with 14 wells. It recently had 19 more added to it, and it may in fact reach a whopping 60 wells from one rig once. And this was at one time until recently unimaginable. So now think about that. You know, I gave it some thought, and I'm thinking about, this is really profound. I mean, the innovation, you could say that it was a simple idea to think of this, the drilling arena or the problem space as being one-dimensional. And think of it, instead of being one-dimensional, as think of it as being three-dimensional. So a perspective that embraced three-dimensional reality was able to produce such enormous gains from that simple shift in perspective. It really is profound. And here is another example of innovation and creativity in America. It's really, really quite incredible. Now, it goes on to say that this also may make America's reserves last longer. And the efficiency means that even an epic price decline won't halt activity at the best fields. What's more, the industrial scale of U.S. drilling means that companies able to write big checks and handle complex logistics are driving the market. They are less likely to feel true financial distress during the next pullback. Producers reckon that the core of the Permian oil field is still profitable in the high 30s to mid $40 a barrel range for U.S. benchmark crude, which is now trading around 66 $5 a barrel. According to, the article continues, according to the International Monetary Fund, not a single Middle Eastern OPEC member can finance its budget at Brent crude below $40 a barrel. So our efficiency, even with the increased production, our efficiency of somewhere in the vicinity of $33 a barrel beats the rest of the world. So we are, we have in just what, 2 or 3 short years, we have improved our efficiency dramatically and our production to a point where it's quite amazing. It's even staggering, the amount of productivity that we are realizing per drill rig. So that's a great example of American innovation and creativity, and it's also a perfect example of complex problem solving. They had a complex problem, which was they were not able to compete in the global market. Oil shale was too expensive to extract from the ground. OPEC was driving them out of business, and what they did then is they didn't give up. They went the innovation route, and they started to come up with ideas and innovative concepts. And the greatest innovation, in my view, in the oil extraction business is the cube. The cube targets different layers of the oil shale arena simultaneously. And that is that way of thinking, which was different. You might say that it just seems to be easy to have done. I don't think it was. I think it required a great deal of ingenuity and creativity, particularly when you look at what needs to be brought into the arena in terms of sensors and in new systems that are able to penetrate to deeper layers, certainly, but also to think of it as a cube instead of as a flat plane arena. Okay, so that completes our discussion of part one, critical thinking and complex problem solving. And now let us press on to part two. Welcome back to part two of Throttle Up for this week. Part two is our storyboard, and this is a story of America and the American job market relating to the recent jobs report that came out. It was rather stunning. Some people were not able to find the right words. I know that the New York Times was having trouble even describing it because they ran out of words to describe how great it was. And so what is it that we should understand about this jobs report? Certainly it was great news. Great news for all of us. Great news for America. Great news for the Trump administration that facilitated a lot of this. Great news for the American workers, because the American workers have wanted to and have gone back to work, and they are producing things on an unprecedented scale. And as in our previous section one, we talked about the oil industry, the oil extraction business, the oil fields, and how those great workers and people working the Permian Basin have come up with some remarkable innovations and quite creative in their process. Anyway, so let's talk about what can we understand about this jobs report? So let me go through a few things here that that sort of like sets the stage for our discussion about the American economy and why is it running on full throttle? And of course, the other related question is, why hasn't it been running on full throttle before? What's different now? All right. So, and according to what's been reported, we have, and these are the job sectors. In the information sector, there are 2.8 million jobs right now. In the finance sector, there are 8.6 million jobs. In the trade, transportation, and utilities sector, there are 27.8 million jobs right now. In the education and health sector, there's quite a bit, actually. There's 23.6 million jobs. Leisure hospitality is up to 16.3 million. Business services, a whopping 20.9 million. Total manufacturing is, I'm not sure I have that one right. Construction is 7.2 million. And, oh, I see, manufacturing is 12.7 million. The private sector total is 126.3 million jobs right now. So U.S. employers have added jobs every month since the fall of 2010, the longest positive trend in history. The jobless rate is 3.8%. And the jobs added since last month, 223,000 jobs. Average hourly earnings are up 23%, and there is a tremendous demand for labor right now. The American economy is operating at full throttle, and what is it? Why is it? That, and this is what matters most, and we will continue with this next week, but some thoughts as we complete this show for this week. What are the conditions that are in place that allow American business to operate the way it's operating right now, and what have we done, and what should we continue to do in the way of providing the pathways for success? And one of the pathways of success is to rethink what we do and rethink why we do it. What do? We don't just hold jobs, but we solve problems. Why do we solve problems? Because we live in a complex world, and that's the way we're going to generate economic benefits for everyone, not only for the suppliers, but for the customers, if we can solve problems. Next week, we'll talk more about being a solutions provider. I know we've talked about that before. We'll continue our discussions of that because that is really where I think businesses are moving, where the American enterprise system is moving more toward the arena of solving problems or providing solutions. And that completes our show for this week. So this is a close of another show, another Throttle Up. And before I go, I would like to acknowledge a few people. I'd like to thank my listening audience for being here. And I would like to thank Red State Talk Radio for providing us an opportunity for each and every weekend to put on this radio show that we call Throttle Up. And I would like to thank all of you veterans out there. Thank you for your service. And I would like to thank the families of the veterans. Thank you for supporting this noble cause. And I would like to thank all of you on active duty in the Guard and the Reserve. Thank you for serving this great country of ours. And with that, I would like to say goodbye, and we will see you all again next week.